the Daytime Confidential podcast brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. On today's show, we're counting down our top five things we're thankful for in soaps, our annual podcast where we get a chance to take a little look back and see exactly what it is that we are thankful for. We hope you enjoy, so stay tuned. Giddens, welcome.
Hey, happy Thanksgiving.
There you go, ready to pork out on stuffing and turkey and all kinds of carb loading.
No carb loading
is okay at Thanksgiving. Just run a marathon the next day.
I bet you wasn't an Indian in the forest eating any stuffing at the first Thanksgiving.
They had corn, and corn is carbs. Jillian Bowe, welcome.
I said stuffing. You didn't say that about no corn, did you?
There's cornbread stuffing.
I bet you they didn't make none at the first damn Thanksgiving, and I'm not going to have none. Neither! How about that?
Jillian, welcome.
Hello.
And Melody Akles, welcome.
Hey, hey.
Well,
we're formal, Luker.
There you go.
Oh, that's my name.
Don't mess it up, right? We're counting down our top five things we're thankful for in 2012 in soaps. Mel, why don't we have you kick things off first?
I am so thankful for a little thing called Twitter. Because it is a blogger's dream. I'm just saying. People's accounts get hacked all the time, and there's so much shade being thrown around. But then we learn about good things, you know, the births of their children and things. But Twitter is so wonderful, and we find out so many things. So I couldn't help but be thankful for Twitter.
Well, and let's face it, we really only care about when they're throwing shade,
okay,
right?
That's the fun part, but you know.
I mean, just admit it.
It's the fun part. But...
Top five Twitter meltdowns.
Yeah.
That would actually be an awesome piece of content to put up before the end of the year.
Yeah.
Jillian, who do you have, or who or what do you have at number five?
Oh my God, that would be so tough to do, just think about it. Ooh, my hands are just smacking themselves. It is my number five is social media. I said it last year. I'm saying it again. I just love it when you soaps to actors and producers and directors and wannabe callers, shot callers and ballers just flip out on
former
that.
Writers and
yes! When y'all flip the FIFO out on that thing, I am just dying, because as soon as you do it, one of our DC readers will hit me, inbox me, but Jillian, did you see it? I'm like, see what? So-and-so just showed out on Twitter or Facebook, and I'm like, what? And I go, and I'm just like, thank you, because it's just, you just give me plethora of hits, so thank you. Just keep it.
I think my favorite is when they do it on Twitter as opposed to Facebook, because it's more instantaneous, like combustion, it seems, at least for me.
Because they don't, the good thing about Twitter is, unless they have it set to private, everybody can see it. You know, you do not know how many times I've wanted to add these actors on Facebook who I hadn't previously added, because I'm hearing actor A is on his Facebook saying so-and-so is a filthy scum sucking. And I'm like, oh, Lord, they don't have time in the middle of this rant to add me to accept a friend request.
I know, right?
Twitter, I just got to go look at it. Oh,
exactly.
It's so wonderful.
Well, Facebook, that's why, you know, when people tell me, I'm like, screen cap it so I can see it, and they send it to me, and I'm just like, thank you!
Jamie?
My number four is, number five, is the talk show wars, because over the years, Luke and I have stressed and thought, you know, with these soaps dropping like flies, you know, we'd be like, oh, Lord, they're killing. First, it was like one a year. Then they started doubling up. You know, they're like, we're going to take out 2 and 2. So it was like, what the hell? If at this rate, by 2014, Daytime Confidential going to be covering Kathy Lee and Hoda. So I am just really grateful that in addition to the four soaps that we have that proved to be the survival of the fittest, that we also have these very soapy talk show wars going on. Who will take Oprah's slot? And from the looks of it, ain't nobody for the step up. But, you know, we got Katie Couric coming on the scene. We got Anderson coming and getting shut down. We got Jeff Probst struggling. We got Steve Harvey, you know, making a, you know, you know, it was like the tortoise and the hare. Katie get the $80 million, but here comes Steve Harvey inching on up.
Put his $2.
You know, yeah, exactly, you know. And next year, Queen Latifah's going to make another stab at it, you know. And plus all the behind-the-scenes stuff with the morning shows. And, you know, it's just, it proves that daytime is alive and well. And now, you know, we're embracing the full of daytime. So I'm happy for these talk show wars.
Oh, my God. You should see. Did you see the latest talk show war with the Today Show and Good Morning America?
Yeah.
They mad because that Lindsay went to them and they're like, you gave us some bunk questions. And they're like, trick, please. Oh, they are just funny as hell.
Need Jesus.
podcast show.
Well, coming in at number five for me is Maria Irina Bell being fired at The Young and the Restless.
Good one.
I don't think there was any more significant behind-the-scenes development this year than finally having her axed. And it, for me at least, it was doubly sweet to then have her be so clueless as to why it happened. Because what is that movie about the boy in the bubble? She was a woman in a bubble. And that bubble got popped. Mel, who do you have at number four?
I am thankful for Heather. She will shoot you up with LSD. Weber, all General Hospital. I have not loved a crazy soap woman so much since Marty Saybrook. I loved all her stuff with the baby switch and just losing her mind and shooting Olivia with LSD and everything. It was so much fun to watch, and Robin Pattinson is amazing, just amazing. So I hope we can get her back for a little bit, and I just so thankful for her.
Well, you know she coming back. I mean, I don't know nothing, but you know that bitch jackknife from the top of that hospital, and she didn't do she all she did was broke her back. I'm like, good God.
Ooh. Well, isn't there already a preview picture of her walking around like next week or something? Or in the next couple weeks.
See? Anybody else, they would have been dead or laid up somewhere. This hoe just take a lick and it's just like...
It's something in the water in Port Charles, New York, because when they punched Helena in the face and she fell off that cliff and still
it
came back. It's like, look, they eating their Wheaties in Port Charles, New York.
Maybe that liquid or serum or whatever that Jerry Jacks put in there was going to be a counteractive to it.
I don't know.
Jillian, who do you have at number four?
I have at number four. Yes, I'm going to go here. If you don't like it, to the left. That is for Scott Hammer and Maria Irina Bell getting the boot. I don't know why they fired me. Girl, where you been? You on that? You drinking that bathtub gin? What you talking? We all know why.
Well, let's go ahead and give the technicality its technical difficulties. Scott Hamner technically left. That's how we say it at the party. You ain't got to go home, but you got to get the hell up out of here.
Scott, you technically left. To me, that sounds like a Star Jones spin, but whatevs. Y'all look it up if y'all don't know what I mean by that. But Maria, you getting the boot, girl, talking about she don't know why they did that. I'm like, you don't know. You don't know what a cage bird sang, do you? I'm like, get the hell out of here. What you been watching? You needed to get the boot. Yes, we did praise her earlier on. Little did we know that she was taking on whose praises? Josh Griffin's praises when he was doing all the heavy lifting and she was just like, I did all that, and then ousted that man and gave us the foolishness and buffoonery we had. Chipmunks and volcanoes, big ass boulders and 50,000-60,000 doppelgangers and that chick biting Robert Scorpio lip. What is this? Girl, you had to go. You had to get going. You had to get got. So See ya.
Jamie?
My number four is Will Sun on Days of Our Lives, the Will and Sonny pairing. It is fast becoming the best gay romance I've seen on soaps. And I say that, you know, everybody knows how much that I loved Kish, but this is just such a well-written, and especially with Days of Our Lives, it's like sifting through a diuretic man's, basically his commode full of shit to find the perfect diamond. That's how I describe this storyline on Days of Our Lives, because Irregardless ain't a word, and I have a pet peeve about people using that. Regardless of the last two regimes, Days has just not figured out how to stay alive. You know, the last two writers did a lot of good stuff, you know, but they got lazy with their plotting, and it kind of just got stuck in the mud. The current regime just went back. We've hashed all this over 1,000 times. The current regime is just doing what they did the last time that got them fired. But through it all, the Will-Sun pairing has managed to really shine like a diamond in shit. And I credit that, you know, largely to the actors, to Chandler Massey and Freddie Smith. But I also have to commend Days on the writing. Whoever is responsible for shepherding that story is hitting a lot of good beats from, you know, everything, like I said, from the two regimes, from, you know, Will being at a gay bar, being the reason that he got his alibi for not killing Stefano, to the issues that Lucas has thinking that, you know, Sonny was going to hit it and quit it here recently. And I mean, I've just enjoyed this entire story, you know, and I can't really say much else for Days. And I wanted to include Days in some kind of way, so I have to give it to Wilson.
You know, I'm going to be honest. When this regime took over, I didn't know what they were going to do with that. Everybody, us and some of us on here included, wanted to see a Chad and Will pairing. And then when they did it with Sonny, I ain't going to lie, I was like, really? You're going to hook up the only two gays in Salem? Really? How cliche. Why he can't have a gay homeboy? But their romance is pimped tight. Everything else is like a little mess. It's like, what you say, male from the M to the S? It's a mess up on there, up in Salem Place. But their romance is, I'm really digging their romance. It's bringing, you know, it's playing all the beats. I mean, we got Lucas doing something. Brian Dottillo is like, look, bitches, shut up. They got me playing this Poppy, who was like, I don't know if I want my son to be with no dude. Brian is like, look, I need to cash a check. Y'all shut it. So I'm glad they're giving Brian Dottillo something to do, because, you know, when any regime comes on, when Brian, they bring him back, they don't know what to do with him. He's off in Africa, off in Chile, or wherever, helping some unfortunate soul. So I'm glad they got him doing something. So, yeah.
Coming in at number four for me is Jason Thompson. I think that this has been his year. I think that the opportunity provided to him when Kimberly McCullough's character Robin was killed off at the beginning of the year provided him with his best opportunity for acting to date. I thought that he hit it out of the park. His grief, the scenes with him and Epiphany, the scenes with him and Anna, the scenes with him and his daughter, Patrick's daughter, I should say, fantastic. He has not dropped the ball once, and I think he deserves the credit for it. Mel, who do you have at number three?
I have Ron Calabotti and Frank Valentini and what they've done at General Hospital. I know we on this podcast were really excited when they came in after Jennifer and Phelps getting the boot. So we were really looking forward to it, and it was not surprised when they did what they said they were going to do. I'm so happy to see veterans on General Hospital. I mean, who could ever think that we would have a story right now involving Duke Clavery and Anna and Luke and Faison, you know, by the end of the year? Like, who ever could think that? I just think that's amazing. And I feel like G8's kind of feels more like an ensemble show than rather than what it was before. And it just makes me really thankful that we have people still left in daytime that take the time out and try to make it what it should be. Great.
My number three is General Hospital's revitalization. Melody, stop looking at my paper, you trick. Everybody knows that, you know, not only Jamie, everybody likes to be like, oh, Jamie, you're a mob enthusiast. You are just a Guza fight. I like Guza. I've never had any issues with, well, I would, let me rephrase that. I like Guza, really respect his work and his craft, but I can honestly say that before GH gave him the boot scoot, he was starting to burn himself out. And then we had that Garen Wolf debacle with that woman in white running around in her Kmart drawers, just eating up air, just eating up airtime. I pulled the page from Guza. I put my candle in the window and was like, somebody please rescue us from this foolishness. And then the One Life Boys came on and they've revitalized the show. People got tired of Sunny and Jason always winning. Who did they bring on? Top Cop John McBain and Anna, shut your mouth, Devane. Two of the most iconic, two people, Anna's very iconic, and McBain is someone who you can't pull the wool over his eye, I wouldn't say for too long. You get one over on John once, twice, but then John will come and get you. They put Jason and Sunny in their places. People have been complaining about there's not a lot hospital. They've brought the hospital back. They've complained about not having the vets. Hello, you just tripping and falling over vets. It's like GH is just overrunning, overflowing with vets. Duke, Robert, Anna, Luke, Tracy, Faison. People have complained about the quartermans. I'm like, well, hell, they brought as many quartermans they can back. I mean, you got to blame Jill and Guza and a part ABC for that because they killed off damn near all the quartermains. They brought the quartermains back. They wanted to focus on the Liz, Sam, Jason triangle. They focused on that, although abruptly ended because Steve Burton said he want to go out to God's country and make that Monavi and play a banjo or whatever. So they brought every complaint that people have had about Guza's regime. Rod and Frank have sat down and listened and said, check, 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 check. Like, I don't know what else you want. Do you want blood? Do you want tap dancing? What? They've revitalized that.
What's Steve Burton doing? What is he doing, Jillian?
God's country, making that Monavi and playing some banjo or something. Sitting by some campfire. Possibly eating Chick-fil-A. Who knows?
Oh, Lord. Jesus, thanks.
Oh.
Everything back. They put all the elements back. They've even gotten rid of some of the foolishness that people wanted. I mean, the people wanted some of the foolishness that Garen Wolf had. I mean, if I hear someone one more time say, I can't believe they killed Robin off, don't you realize the girl said in the Daily Beast she wanted to go because of the previous regime's foolishness. And Ron and Frank have done something that has appeased her and appeased the fans, have given her a window to come back in case she's like, oh, I want to come on back. I mean, they have really regenerated that show. I haven't been excited to watch GH in a long time, honey, trust. I mean, it still has its bumps and hurdles. Kate, Connie, Kate, and all that bullshit.
That's a dishonorable mention for me.
Yeah, I said they still have some hurdles. They need to get rid of that shit. They need to integrate that hoe real quick, Ron. But everything else has been pretty good. People wanted to see more Alexis. I have not seen more of Nancy Lee and her damn boobs in my life. I'm like, I'm tired of seeing her tits now. I'm like, I got my own Nancy. I don't need to see yours. Mine's are pretty nice. I'm tired. They've given you everything. Lucas wanted Helena and her funky butter knife back. Ooh, come on. Come on back. Who crawled her 2,000-year-old ass up off that cliff with that butter knife? Helena is back. Like, what else do you want? So that's my number three right there. the reason.
Stuart Damon, no.
Oh, great, Dave. Great gravy. He came back, too. Yeah. He came back.
I know. I was just doing that for a punchline. Jamie.
Solo. I'm good.
My number three is The Bold and the Beautiful Finding Its Groove. Since we've been doing this podcast especially, The Bold and the Beautiful has been feast or famine. It never seems to have been able to, well, basically, I'm going to say this. Ever since, you know, Bill Bell handed over the reins, Brad Bell, while a great showman and a great writer when he wants to be, has struggled with finding that balance that his dad had with the show, with it, you know, being glitzy, glamorous, sexy, and also campy, funny, and silly all in 20 minutes a day. You know, Bill had a way of making it work. And Brad followed that for a while. Then he kind of went his own route and kind of went a little more in the direction of the late, great James Riley, which, you know, I'm a Riley fan, but, you know,
seeing
Sheila run a militia and, you know, people, you know, seeing sharks eat babies and all that kind of kooky stuff that Brad would do, you know, and then the show would go back and do some great human interest story. And in the last couple of years, it's really been glaring. You know, you'll have 6 months of Jennifer Garris running around in her drawers with her drawers up the crack of her butt, slithering honey on John McCook. And then it's 6 months of Stephanie telling the black folks on Skid Row, "You are all my people, and I'm going to give y'all a coffee shop," like she's Oprah. "I'm giving you a coffee shop, and you, and you, and you."
You sound like Jennifer Hudson there, Dreamgirls.
So we get six 6 months of crazy and 6 months of kooky, you know, or 6 months of powerful story. And this last summer, we got 4 months of, you know, instead of honey, we got just an insipid love triangle. But now we're at a place where the young adults have their little triangles and quadrangles back at Forrester Creations, where they always have belonged. But we also have powerful stories, Stephanie's demise, Katie's postpartum depression. So the show finally seems to be getting back to what it was circa the early to mid-90s, where it's got that balance. You've got good stories. You've got, you know, Katie's postpartum pushing Bill and Brooke together. You know, Taylor jumping up in there. I was yelling at the TV this week, which that's always a good sign. When I'm yelling, "What the hell am I watching?" which is what I was doing with Days, that's not a good sign for me as a viewer. But when I'm yelling at the character, I'm engaged in the show. So when I'm yelling, "Shut up, Taylor! You always in Brooke's business!" I'm like, oh my God, it's back. The Bold, the Beautiful is back for me. But now I'm loving to hate Taylor again as opposed to wondering why they bring her back to do nothing with her, which that's what I've been thinking ever since she came back. Now I'm like, okay, she's being Taylor. She's being that, you know, Melanie Wilkes, you know, prissy little thing running around all up in Brooke's business, you know, chasing Katie all over L.A., you know. And I'm like, you know, Taylor would have got mugged in L.A. running around with that big designer bag in these alleys chasing Katie. But I'm just like, okay, I'm feeling this show again, and I'm hoping it stays, because with B&B in the last couple of years, it's easy for it to get way off track really fast. But right now, it's found its balance, and I'm thankful for that, and I look forward to watching it every day.
Daisy told me to tell you on behalf of homeless people, they know knockoff bags when they see one. That's what I heard, Jack Taylor.
We talk about what we're thankful for, but I did have a gripe moment last week.
We'll have dishonorable mentions.
No, Stephanie was talking about, but this is minor. Stephanie was talking about, you know, how she wants all of them in there to carry on her torch to help the misfortunate, or the unfortunate, or the misfortunate, or those who are less fortunate. Why they cut to Daisy and Marcus? I said, God dog it, we don't need y'all help all the time.
Daddy is a lawyer and is Bill's sidekick. He got dough. It's like, goddamn, Stephanie.
Not all that homeless man who got ran off. myself. You know, but I thank him for trying, you know, and at least Daisy, look, you know, now that Daisy's rich, she straightened out her hair. What they tried to say when she was poor, her hair was all tied up.
Oh, that's spiteful old man. I got
straight. I said, oh, okay. But just like with Drusilla, remember when Drusilla came out of Young and the Restless with her hair tied up in the beanie bees? Now she, you know, then when she was, you know, that was the ugly duckling. Then when she became the swan, here come the perm. But
yeah,
anyway.
She had them sealy braids when she was first.
Yes, they got their hair laid now, honey. Trust and believe.
But no, I'm thankful that B&B has found its niche again, and I'm just praying that it stays going forward. And, you know, if Brad is in that office being like, what if we bring back some honey with Donna? I hope Patrick Mulcahy or Michelle Valjean or Kay Alden or somebody on that staff like has an electric prod and just zaps him on the booty. Nope, we're not going to do that. So.
See, that's when you need a Vicky Windham to be like, no, you will not, and chuck an Emmy at his head. Be like,
whoosh. Well, he had one. She's leaving, though. Susan Flattery.
Damn, I miss Sue.
He had Windham in there.
Coming in at number three for me is Heather, Taya, and Todd on General Hospital. I am so happy to have Heather on there because she, as we've mentioned in previous podcasts, is a villainous type character who people are actually rooting to survive because she's so fantastic. She has had a wonderful year on back in Port Charles, loving it, loving it, loving it. Of course, there's Todd. I'm loving the fact that he has amazing chemistry with Laura Wright's Carly. Roger Howarth has been fantastic in the season. I like the storyline plots where he's actually keeping secrets from Star. And even when he tried to rescue Port Charles, that was always also fun. But of course, my favorite is the fact that we have Taya, even though she can be a bit of a foghorn at times. It has been wonderful to have Taya pop in and out of Port Charles all of 2012, and I'm looking forward to hopefully more after this next stint is up. So those are mine at number three.
Oh, my girl, she did it up, boy. Oh, Lorenzo, damn it.
Mel, who do you have at number two?
Number two, I am thankful that all our veteran actors seem to be making a comeback right now on like a good number of our soaps here. Third General Hospital, because that's where I am. We're talking about, you know, Anna's back. You know, we got Faison back. Duke is back. Granted, he laid up in a bed somewhere, some crazy hospital, but he's still back. Like,
Faison, you know, he needs to borrow Daisy Flatiron. I'm like, what the fuck, dude? Why you here on throne? Woo!
Dylan, you were talking about we're seeing more of Nancy Legrand as Alexis. Like, come on, how can you not love it? Then we just saw Carolyn Hennessy back as Diane. You know, you gotta love all of that. Then on the Young and the Restless, granted the story's not so great, but we got Cricket, Danny, Nina, Paul, Lauren, and Michael all in a storyline together. This is 2012. Like, of seeing it, it has that great nostalgia feeling when you see all those characters together in a room. You're like, oh, I remember that time when this happened and that happened. And, you know, you start talking about it with your family members and, you know, remembering the stories, and it's really great. And Eileen Davidson is back all days as Chris did. It's all kinds of good things. So I think it's nice that, you know, this is one of the few genres that you can have these actors that have been in for so long, 20 and 30 years, and they can leave and come back, and you're like, oh my gosh, I remember this happened. And it's just, you know, it's nice feel good type thing. Yeah. So
I made a little jokey joke about them vets being back. I'm like, Monica and Monica came back and she slapped Carly. I'm like, she slapped her so hard, Carly started asking for her sister Reva. She was like, Reva girl. She was like, Reva girl. Oh, sorry.
I'm your sister Reva.
Reva girl. You know Reva be like, I'm coming, but Carly. Ooh. Damn, Monica slapped the fire out that girl. Ooh. Now, was that slap better than Mama Evans slapping Nora or what?
Oh, that was a good slap because she reached up. It's always good when a shorter person slaps a tall person because Monica, look, she reached up and grabbed the piece of Carly's face.
She reached back, like, she went way back to get that momentum, and voila! I was like,
slaps her back. Hello, that's my honorable mention, because Brooke slapped the fire out of Taylor Friday. She gave her a good tap in her mouth, too. I said, see, the slaps are back.
Don't do that too hard, girl. Her face is...
Daytime said, we going to take slaps back from Bravo, because, you know, Bravo is where you go when you want to see somebody in some stilettos knock the fire out of another woman.
Yeah, shoot.
Or pull a weave or something. Mm-hmm. Jillian?
My number two is Days' storytelling of Chad. Oh, let me say it, Chad. See? Sorry, Freudian slip. Days' storytelling of Will and Sunny. At first, I'm not gonna lie, I'm like, why do they have to have the only two gays hooking up? Everybody was clamoring for Chad and Will. The heat, the fire was there, and then Will just giving EJ them looks. People were clamoring for that. I wasn't really clamoring for that. I thought that could have been a good thread for him manipulating Will and Will manipulating him. That would have been interesting. But I'm really starting to dig Sonny and Will. You know, I really wanted them to Will to have some gay homeboy to kick it with, to talk, forgive Will, to be like, man, my loud grandpappy just tripping about me being gay and bringing my boo over or something. But I'm...
Boys, get up! Don't get down!
I'm serious!
He may not want him to get up either.
Ooh, get down, Will! I don't mean you, Will. I don't mean you, Will. You know, the Roman sound like he's Texas. But I'm really enjoying their storytelling. I really didn't think that this regime would have been invested in that, because they just came back and just decided that Marlene and Daryl stuff was just for the birds. They just decided to read, write, and erase that stuff. But I'm glad that they kept this on. I'm glad that they're telling it the way that they are. I'm glad that they're playing so many beats to it, with Nick having a, you know, they're bringing a lot of people involved with it, like Nick having a problem with it. You know it's good storytelling when soap fans are going at it. Now, see, I don't advocate this. You know, I don't advocate people going after actors, because when they open up a can on your ass, I don't want to hear it, because you're going after them. But you know it's good storytelling when people are starting to, like, cloud reality with fiction. When, you know, what's his name? The young man that plays Nick.
Blake Barris.
You know, I see someone retweeted in my timeline. He was like, look, that's not me. I ain't got no problem with the Moles. You know, I ain't got no problem with the Moles, y'all. That's just a character. I'm like, okay, you know, sometimes I'm like, okay, y'all are getting too freaky.
See, it's just joined social media, because you know that's always been. I mean, look at Eileen Fulton. She talked about how the woman came up to her in the department store and slapped a fire out of her and told her, you stop messing with Bob like that, Lisa. And I know she was like, you crazy bitch. I'm an actress in New York. But
she grabbed her can of corn and chunk her in the head. But, you know, sometimes I'm like, all right, so fancy to dial it back. It's just fiction. But you know it's good storytelling when they are going at the actor like, how dare you? And, you know, for the actor to be like, look, I ain't got a problem with the Moles, man. I'm down with them. I live out in WeHo. I don't know where he lives. I'm just clowning with that. But the storyline is that good for people to just be going bananas over. I mean, they've been getting crazy press over Will and Sonny. Crazy critical acclaim by it. I was really scared for a moment that Days was going to bitch it up, because Gary and the other one just didn't seem to know what the hell they were doing for a minute. But I guess they got a handle on it. So kudos to them. I don't even... What's the other one's name? Who's working with Gary? What's his name, y'all?
Chris Whitesell.
There you go. See, sorry, baby. Forgot your name.
Jamie?
At number two for me, you've all mentioned it already. I guess I just had to put it a little bit higher because that is where it was for me. And that is Maria Arena to the Bell. For whom the bell told. They had told for her, and they told her, you ain't got to go home, but you got to go to Mocha, because you can't stay up in here being here 2 days a week. tried to write and produce and everything else and have autonomy in your contract and, you know, everything else she was trying to do and messing up the Young and the Restless while she was trying to do all of that. You know, in the history of soapdom, I can't really think of anybody other than Erna Phillips, Bill Bell, and Agnes Nixon who should have ever had complete autonomy. And what do all three of them have in common? They created their shows. The fact that this woman had the audacity to fix her mouth to ever demand that she get full autonomy in a contract. Ron Carlovati does not have full autonomy in a contract. Ron Valentini does not have full autonomy in a contract. Ken Corday does not even have full autonomy because Sony can tell him, look here, Ken, this is how it's going to be, and you're going to go play some music and be quiet about it.
Isn't but the only one that has full autonomy Brad? Maybe Brad?
Probably. Yeah, Brad, I'm sure the closest thing. But for this woman who had no merit or no evidence showing, because, you know, well, my boy, when Jim Riley came back that second time, he told him, I got full autonomy. But he took days from number seven and number two. Now, yeah, he messed up with that full autonomy in his second stint. But, hey, I can see how he got it. What Maria took into the meeting to ever get that? So I blame Sony on that because y'all should have never signed the paperwork. Y'all should have said, Trick, please. We're not giving you full autonomy. What have you done? The ratings have eroded annually.
What have you done for me lately?
So why did she ever get full autonomy to begin with? Because when she had some checks and balances, the show was a little better. When she got full autonomy, we got Chipmunks and craziness and foolishness. And it just continued on and on and on arrogantly. So to the very end, you know, to her writing these love letters to the character of Victor Newman on Sony TV's dime, basically, and just all these legal stories that never had any resolution playing out at once. I mean, she turned that show into a complete and utter mockery. And I'm not saying right now, I'm not thrilled with the state of why not right now. I kind of expected a little more sweeping change, but it's better than it was, and that's saying something. And there's checks and balances now. There is no complete autonomy, so I don't have to worry about, you know, Jill and Josh, you know, doing the do, because there's checks and balances again. Whereas Maria built her own mini fiefdom on that set, and she really just lost her way, and, you know, I wish her well. Obviously, she has not moved on because she is on the Facebook telling fans, that ain't what I did, y'all, girl. I wouldn't have never done that. And I'm like, we know. You would have ended this story with Phyllis dressed up like a donkey, you know, running through Glowworm. They'll never get me. Or whatever. You know, you're right. That ain't how you would have ended. Phyllis would have been at the mouth of, you know, they would have gone on location to the doggone, one of those, Yosemite, you know, you would have done something outrageous or ridiculous. Phyllis would have fell in the canyon or something. You're right.
I think we would have seen Michelle Stafford. You know, Michelle's like a truck driver with that mouth. We would have seen Michelle on that Twitter. What the fuck, dude? Anybody want to hire me? You know Michelle would have gone fuck.
His sister Lilith would have come on there and they would have got into a fight at the Grand Canyon and both fell off the edge. Yeah, that's what you dressed up like donkeys or gophers, because that is what you were writing, you know, and would get up there like nobody's business. Anybody who's been in the press room knows Brad is self-deprecating and, you know, like when I, you know, someone asked him, what would your dad say about you winning this Emmy? And he was like, it's about time. I think that was Nelson Branca who asked that question, trying to give credit where credit's due. Maria gets up there, honey child. She don't get up there with any type of, you know, and every writer has this. This is what bothers me. Any writer who doesn't think that they can improve is not a good writer. Every writer I know who is an egotistical person who thinks, oh, I know I'm good, from the web series world all the way up to the soaps to anything. When you are that pleased with your own product, you are not a good writer, because every writer is plagued by their own inner psychosis. And is this good enough? Is this good enough? Not Maria. She gets up there. Yes. I was inspired by Bell Bell. He was my mentor. And everything I do is rooted in character. And really? Really?
And you my aunt whips and TM Turner Classic movies.
And that just showed that her ego had gotten so big and her husband didn't have the balls to put her in check. So Steve Kent had to come on in there and say, I ain't got to sleep with her every night. I'll put her in check. And me, and with the help of CBS and Angelica McDaniel, we are going to not only put her in check, we're going to put her in the unemployment line. So how about that? So, yeah, that's my number two. Thank you. I am thankful she is gone.
Can you imagine Thanksgiving next week at that house? Laura Lee Bell. I mean, Laura Lee pretty much said in her interview with, you know, our homie Michael Logan, hello Logan, that she didn't know if she was coming back. That she was like, I don't know if I'm coming back. But now she's like, hell yeah, I want to come back. Can you imagine Thanksgiving dinner, Pastor? Please, so Laura Lee, I heard you said you would come back. How dare you!
Trick, my daddy started this show. I'm not gonna stop playing cricket because you had chipmunks running around Genoa City. Look, we need to play. Look, let's write a script and act out the Bell Thanksgiving. Look, like now, now, girls, girls.
Yes.
I'm not even gonna say. I bet you. I've heard that all of them are happy she gone, except for her husband. Allegedly.
Yeah, let's
well,
put it that
way. The Bells are just as concerned about their legacy as the soap fans. Best believe that. You didn't see none of them talk about this as an outrage. Maria was all the stars agree with me. The only one who said anything about it being a bad thing was Eric Braeden. And that's because he knew that the days of the show being about him 5 days a week were coming to an end. That's my feeling.
But you notice him now. You notice him now on that thing. I peep. I don't follow Eric on Twitter, but I peekaboo at you, boo. And he is all, oh, we have some great stuff coming up. Because I bet you Jill said to look at here, bitch, I can put you in a home. I can put Victor in a home or in a coffin. Now you better play ball, damn it.
Saw what Ellie Bell did to him. Give Victor. You know? The fits and that and running around seeing sparkly people and stuff.
I'm serious.
Like, is that epilepsy? I ain't never known no epileptics. I just see them shaking. I ain't never seen no epileptics seeing those sparkly images and stuff. I thought, what is that?
Snowflakes. I'm like, you can't.
Getting a dog. I'm like, he got it a lot better. And it's how it should be now. It is how it should be. Victor is still viable, but the center of gravity has moved to his sons and daughter. Because, hello, and this is not ageist, because I believe and GH shows that you can be viable right up to they put you in the coffin. But it's not sensible to have 70-year-olds romancing somebody new every week. That doesn't even go with the flow of life, unless you're Donald Trump or Rupert Murdoch, and maybe that's what they were trying to do, because they do tend to trade in their brides every 2 or 3 years. But they slowed their roll after a certain point. Victor is like, I'm going to be 80, and I'm going to still be trying to look. No. No.
And then he wants to get
90.
Already open tuna.
You know, he's already looking at Heather like, didn't my grandboy have you? I'm not Heather. Eden. Come on, sit on my lap, girl.
Yeah, now, can you imagine? Reminds me of that old men in them clubs. You know, with their peg legs. Sit it on down. They put you
but
in
can you imagine being a date of Noah's or any of them? Because they already know. Well, your grandpa try to date your daddy's women. You know, the little girl be pulling a skirt out and that Victor is leering out in the corner.
That's you. You so stupid.
You're going to be ripe in a few years, right for the picture.
That's like grab your can of mace, you squirt that in his eye real quick. Psst. And be like,
the only one who wanted to see that madness was Maria Arita Bell, because she kept writing it. If you know, obviously she wanted to see it. So yes, that's my number two. Go with God. I'm reading Jack Canfield, so I don't wish her no ill will. I hope she, you know, I hope she gets to write her dream soap opera about, you know, chipmunk bank robbers and art museums. I'll do an interview about it. Get it on TV. But I don't want it on The Young and the Restless.
Coming in at number two for me is Ron and Frank at General Hospital. And I'm going to just say it this way. Thank you. Mel?
My number one thing that I am thankful for is Daytime Confidential, Pop Confidential, and my DC family. I love doing this. I can't stress it anymore. I love hearing from all the readers and how many, you know, the interviews, people that we get to speak to because we do this, you know, breaking the stories, all kinds of stuff. It's so amazing to read, you know, the comments on the blog and people on Twitter. Some girl found me the other day on Get Glue. I was just tweeting away about Nashville and she was like, "Hey, are you that girl from our confidential?" and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, "Okay, calm down. Breathe." Yes, I am. it was fun, you know. It was a nice feeling, but I am so thankful for that. And of course, last but certainly not least, I am thankful for Luke Kerr, Jamie Gittens, Jillian Bowe, and Regan Salura, because y'all don't realize that we are actually a little family. Because if there is something wrong with somebody's mama or one of us or anything in their family, you better believe that the other four of us are going to call, text, email, send a telegram, however, to get in touch with said person to say, "Hey, are you okay? Are you all right? Is there anything I can do for you? You let me know. You call me and I got you." You know, I never thought when I started this almost 5 years ago, if y'all can believe that, that I would be gaining two brothers and two sisters. So I love all of y'all and everyone. And
oh, my daddy been at it again. See, now I ain't going to get no inheritance. You lost too? Shit.
Please believe it. So I love y'all. I love everyone.
Look, girl, Luke said, well, look here. Brother Luke said, "Bitch, don't call me if you got some problems." He going to hang up
like,
that phone
like on it's you. Family. And it's always one to act up.
And Jamie's still waiting for the singing stripper to deliver him a message.
No, I'm not. See, you don't love Jesus. This is about thanks for the giving. And you are.
And what would you be more thankful for than to have a singing stripper show up at your door?
I don't believe in graven images of the body.
It's not.
That is lust.
It's flesh and blood.
In the olden days, the Indians would have took you out in the woods and beat you with a tomahawk.
What the fuck is this? What are you talking about? Oh, God.
Hey, I'll see.
If you'd like, I can show you my grandfather's Indian head collection.
I don't want to see that.
No.
Indian hammer, I should say.
I was
pardon
to say, what y'all got going on at Kerr Farm?
No.
Actually, he actually has an Indian hammer collection. My dad has an arrow.
You said head. At first, I was kind of nervous. I had to hang up on you today. I had to hang up with the FBI and come in and put his laptop to the ground and break out. Grab little lady and be like, "Girl, let's go."
Jamie, who do you have at number one?
My number one has already been mentioned by everyone, but it is the General Hospital resurgence. That is the thing that I was most thankful for in soaps. We've seen it before. It's called the One Life to Live resurgence, and it was basically spearheaded by the same two gentlemen, Frank Valentini and Ron Carlovati, who catch more shade than a little bit on Twitter for their efforts. But if Shay translated into ratings, they would be rich. Because it's true. Their ratings go up. They do, you know, it's, oh, they're so campy. Oh, it's so ridiculous. You see these comments, and I'm like, when GH was at its peak, it told stories about these same people. The last time Faison was in town, well, not the last time, because the last time he burned up Baby Lucky.
No, the last time he was in town, he went after Felicia.
Oh, okay. He came back after the
He went after Felicia.
I remember that one. Okay, yeah. But you know, one of the more famous times was when he stole some crystals from a space alien, and everybody, you know, Frisco and Felicia and Anna and Robert were trying to help Casey get his crystals back so he could return to his home planet. So when I see these comments, I'm like, if Ron and Frank are, you know, doing what we always ask these writers to do and the producers to do, which is look at the history, would they rather that be the story than the two-faced man? You know, I'm just, I am very, very proud of what they've done with the actors. They have gone against the grain. Every network exec in the game is younger, younger, younger. We want stories with younger, younger, younger. And they have consistently told stories with these vets because they know this audience more than these network executives who are talking about younger, younger, younger. We want to get a younger demo. It's not going to happen. The best you can hope for is to lure back the people who loved it when it was great, which was the 1980s, which was pretty much the peak of all the soaps. And if you can figure out a way to move story forward, bring on the younger generation, and engage them in stories, but center it on the classics that these people know and love, you'll get your ratings up every time. I wish they could be subcontracted out. I wish Kid Cordae could be like, look, ABC, I know we're competitors, but can y'all get them to at least write us up a 300, you know, let them study the Days of Our Lives history books, and then just let us write a 400-page document for our people to follow. Because you look at the difference. Days has pretty much brought back all of their greats from the 80s, and we have is Kayla and Patch on a mission right now to, you know, stop the cult, you know, because Patch and Kayla used to stop religious cults and stuff. No, Kayla is running around grinning at Abe. Hey, Abe, hey, Kayla.
Ew.
That's what we're getting on Days. Kristen DiMera, you know, is she getting pentagrams painted on her naked body? No, she is going to the church meeting with Brady. And then they play dramatic music, you know. But you look at GH, and it's like they are going balls to the walls. You can tell somebody has said, we ain't finna worry about whether or not we get renewed. We gonna treat this show like every day could be our finale. So every day, we gonna give these viewers their bang for their buck. Forget Cliffhanger Friday. GH has turned into Cliffhanger Monday through Friday. And do I like all the stories? No, sir, and no, ma'am. But I didn't like all the stories on Santa Barbara when I loved it, and or Another World. You never like all the stories, but if the majority of the show is entertaining, I'm good. Is it way campier than GH was when I started watching? Oh, yeah. Yes, it's very campy. It's a campy show. They got psychics and everything else, but it is
LSD psychics, no less.
Self-aware, the good outweighs the bad. To me, the Anna Duke, Faison, Robert, you know, that story is on fire. Todd is on fire. All of that is on fire. Is it all great? No. I do not like Connie Kate. I did not like that wedding. I have not liked hardly any of the Connie Kate story. Some of them younger babies don't know they own Earth, you know.
And they just got rid of the wrong one.
But the thing of it is, I give this show a strong, strong A minus, you know, because the few things that needs to be worked out, that's with any show. No show is ever perfect. Revenge, which we scream about, is not perfect. You know, I mean, I think that they care. Like Mel said earlier, they're trying to make it better. I don't feel that when I watch Days. I feel like somebody has been given a mandate. Okay, let's keep this thing going. So we're going to shoot 6 months in advance. And who cares? We're not going to be able to change story if it's bad. We'll just do it. You know, just write.
See, that's how I feel about B&B.
No, I don't feel that way at all about B&B. Oh, my God. You really feel that way about how they've written Stephanie's end story? You think that's just...
No, I never said that about Stephanie's end story. Stephanie's end story is the exception. But once they...
story right now!
Is, but it's right now, but for most of the year we were complaining about it, about the show.
We were complaining, but I don't think that what I said is, well, you speak for yourself on that.
That's why I said, I said myself.
I don't feel that at all, that they're just saying, oh, we want to just turn something in. I don't feel that way. I've never felt
no,
that.
No, because Brad has admitted that in an interview somewhere. He admitted, yeah, people are tired of them babies, the Liam Hope, okay. Steffi Triangle, so I'm a backburner it a little bit. Brad knows his fault.
I think Brad, when he does bad stories, he thinks they're good. I don't think he's just being lazy. The only soap on daytime right now, and the common denominator is Ken Cordae. I took it easy on him for a while, but, I mean, you know, my praise is still on GH for my number one, but I'm just saying, since we're going here, the only soap on daytime that I feel consistently has shown a lack of desire to stay on the air is Days of Our Lives. I think all of the rest of them, even Maria at her worst, I think she thought she was telling good. I know she thought she was telling good stories.
She said it.
I'd say she. There, I she kinda,
said it. Yeah, and if there's anything we should do, is should believe what she said.
But at
right?
least she felt she was doing. At least she was doing what she felt was best. I do feel, in my opinion, I don't feel that that's what Greg Ming feels. I think Greg Ming really wants to save the show. I don't know about the writers; don't know enough about them. But I feel Ken Corday, in my opinion, it just feels like, let me just find some people to keep this money train going as long as I can. Because the proof is in the product. I mean. You've had five different writing regimes and everything, and the show still sucks. Well, dude, maybe you should just say, yeah, I own this, but let me let Sony take the lead, and I'll just do what I want to do, which is play golf and compose music. Back to GH. I feel that they're hitting it out of the park. I know that they have
so glad.
ABC's thought processes around. You know, there's talk. You know, Frank Valentini gave an interview a while back about there still being hope about All My Children and One Life to Live. I'm not going to elaborate, but I'm just saying there's always hope. ABC has come to see, in a lot of ways, the error of previous regimes' ways. And I think a lot of that has to do with General Hospital and a lot. You know, primetime soaps are so hot right now. You kind of do have to go, well, damn. ABC just bought a project from former All My Children star Josh Duhamel that is about, you know, a soap struggling to survive. We know here at Daytime Confidential that people care about that because it keeps, you know, us going, you know, definitely. And I'm glad to see that they did, you know, they're on Twitter, they're on Facebook, they're doing whatever they can.
Robin left that Miss Clara back in Genoa City. Kind of
Robert, so Robin didn't come back with a die job. It's
all chow.
You're happy with GH, you know, minus Connie Gates.
Mel or Jillian, who do you have at number one?
My number one, I know people are going to be like, what? But yeah, I sat and thought about this. And my number one, even though I poo pooed on it, I'm going to tell you why. My number one is Stephanie's Goodbye. I know I'm not a fan of it, but considering that this lady, Susan Flannery, was there from the moment that show said hello, when they turned their lights on, she's been there. They're giving her a good send-off. Weeks and weeks of, you know, of Stephanie on the air. I'm glad that they're giving Susan Flannery this length of a send-off. I really thought they were going to do it for like a week, you know, have Stephanie sick the Monday, and the Friday she was in the box. Because, you know, B&B tends to get that way.
Ron Moss left with a text message, or Ridge did. So.
See,
baby, I'm coming back.
Oh, no. Tie them scarves up around you. I mean, this just goes to show you that despite whatever backstage shenanigans are going on, Brad is giving this woman her due. He's giving credit where credit's due. I mean, Susan Flannery has been with that family from when his daddy was back in Chi-Town writing scripts for days. When she was on days, that's like 40 some odd years, is it not? She's, you know, even though, you know, I really don't feel the way, you know, I have my own beliefs on why she really left. I mean, you know, we all know why she really left, but we all go there. They're giving her a good send-off. They could have been like Ron Moss and be like, you know, when he's like, the clock stopped at 2:45, you know, and at 2:45, Brad do a wink, wink, nudge, nudge, and be like, and your ass stopped working here at 2:45 with this text message, bitch. You know, they could have been funky with her with that, but no, they're giving her a good send-off. She's going to get that Emmy nomination. If she don't, then, you know, this is hers in the bag. If she don't get this, then, yeah, I'm going to be acting the fool like some about Emmy reforms and so forth. They're giving her a fantastic send-up. I'm not liking how they're doing, like, you know, giving her cancer. I do not like that because, you know, Darlene Connolly is dead. but they still have Sally living on. They didn't kill Sally off. She is just like, you know, this is for the birds, so to speak, and y'all gonna kill her off? I didn't like that. But what they're doing to pay homage to this lady is pretty cool. So that's my number one.
Coming in at number one for me is something that Mel already mentioned, and that is Daytime Confidential. The DC family, both my co-hosts as well as the readers. And I also want to throw in The Family You Make, because this week has sort of been a little bit reflective for me. We had some people, we had a family friend who was killed in a car accident this last week. And when you have that happen and it's so unexpected, it really makes you stop and consider. And so for me, even though I have my family and my relationship with my family is what it is, in some respects, the family that you make is sometimes more valuable or equally as valuable as the family you're born with. And for me, that family at Daytime Confidential is Jamie and Reagan and Jillian and Melody. And it wouldn't be possible without you, the readers and listeners. And this November is the 7-year anniversary of the podcast. And so it's amazing that for now 7 years, the podcast has been on air. DC, the site, has been on the web for 6 years. We're only 3 years away from a 10-year anniversary. I never would have dreamed way back when I was still in college working on this, that this would be the case. But here we are. So I want to say thank you to you, the listeners. I want to say thank you to my co-hosts, who are also, as Mel said, a family. Jamie, do you have any dishonorable or honorable mentions?
Dishonorable. I'm going to say, you know, since this is a thankful, I'm not going to go too deep in the dishonorables. My dishonorable mainly is it's still the lack of promotion, the lack of good public relations across the board in daytime. CBS Daytime has killer PR, killer PR. You know, the whole day, you know, they've got their cross promotion thing going. The publicists, you know, are professional. They realize that we're bloggers, that it is our job to be snarky. Nothing snarky I've said about Maria Arena Bell or anybody else has prevented CBS from reaching out to me to promote their shows, because they're what? Professionals. You know, just going to say that ABC don't have that situation with their remaining daytime soap opera. The fact that we love and promote and have promoted both of the shows that Frank and Ron have done better than anybody else in this game. Yeah, I'm going to say it because it's the goddamn truth. And the fact that we have done so in the face of having to deal with the laziest, most inept publicist for both of those shows, it goes to show how much we love the shows that they do. And I would be thankful if ABC would realize that promotion and PR and adequate getting information out and doing what you're supposed to do, not like it's 1995 when your job was just to make sure that three magazines got what they needed each week, but engaging the blogosphere. I'm not meaning us, because we have not had to work with this person for years, because I still break everything I need to break in daytime without boo. But if you poll any of the soap bloggers out there and a couple of the magazine editors I've talked to, ain't nothing changed but the name of the soap she worked for. And if you ask anybody about it, it's, well, she's nice. Nice gonna get y'all canceled.
Nice, I ain't trying to say that,
you know, nice will get you canceled. Get somebody in there that's gonna do her job.
And so just to clarify, you're saying canceled, not cancer.
I said canceled.
It was sounding like cancer.
It was that sounded like no cancer. I said canceled. Nice will get you canceled. You need a digital publicist who knows guerrilla marketing, who is not sending out press releases to people a week late on stuff.
You need
somebody who is not lazy. And I'm going to say that that's my dishonorable. And it's going to keep on being my dishonorable, you know, because I hear about her. She be throwing shade at me, and she don't even know I know she be throwing shade. And I'm like, girl, I'm going to keep on breaking whatever I want to break. I've been dominating ABC Scoop, and ain't nothing thing you going to ever be able to do to stop me. So do your job, girl. We got 2 million page views a month. We were getting 1.4 million a couple of years ago. Let's do that math. Find me a magazine who has more readers than they did a few years ago, and I'll give you a big old gourd to cut open for Christmas or Thanksgiving or whenever you need it. But our readership has gone up, and you still bite the hand that blogs about you. But anyway.
Jillian?
I mean, it's like, you know, you want to say, you mad, boo? You mad? Instead of being mad, I don't know, me personally. You know, me being the sneaky person that I am, instead of being mad that you scooping somebody, I would just embrace you and just try to stop the situation. I would try to, control the situation myself.
With Perez Hilton and all that. But, you know, daytime is slow. They slow on the upkeep with stuff. And I'm like, people still going to come to Daytime Confidential for what they need to get about daytime. Not that that's not – everybody else is out there still doing their thing, definitely. You know, but I'm just saying, you know, I just don't believe in lazy people keeping jobs in this economy. For what? For what? Just because it's the same way it's always been done? There needs to be new blood, not just in writers' rooms, and we always talk about that. But, you know, and let me praise, you know, let me – now that was my dishonorable. Let me go back to the honorable. Let me praise people like Eva DeMergeron at The Bold and the Beautiful, who is a stellar publicist, and Aaron O'Brien, the CBS publicist, you know. And, I think I've had issues in the past with each of them because, you know, that's just being a blogger, being a snarky blogger, you're going to have that. But we are professional and cool and do our jobs now, you know. But, yeah. Miss Lazy, you know who you are.
Name them.
Okay, Jillian, did you have an honorable or dishonorable?
My dishonorable mention are these actors that try to bite the hand that feeds them because they can't get their own way. Sweetie, if you see them backburnering you, it's not because they're doing it out of spite, although we do know that writers do that. It's the fact that everybody takes a back seat. So stop your bitching. Everybody else has to take a back seat and someone else has to shine. It's not called, you know, General blank blank and them, or the young, you know, blank blank and the rest of us, or them and the bold and the beautiful, or so and so. Days of Our Lives. It's an ensemble show. If you don't like what's going down, your ass can pack your stuff and do your own soap.
Don't tell him that. Please don't tell him that. I don't need to see nothing else said in a. If I see. Okay, Jillian, if we get coming soon, El Segundo, I'm going to blame you.
I'm going to tell you, look at him. El Segundo better be up on par with these soaps on the air. No, I'm tired. I'm really sick and tired of X, Y, and Z actor or X, Y, and Z actress sitting their ass up on Twitter or Facebook being mad because they have to get backburnered because it's time for someone else to, you know, come out and play.
I ain't mad at them because they pay my bills. Keep on showing out on the Twitter. Tell us how you really feel right now.
No, well, keep doing what you're doing, but stop, you know, you need to be a team player. Step your game up. I mean, the one, like, who should be mad that he don't get no love is Christoph St. John. They pay him and every dark girl that comes around, and after a while, you see him, they, when it's not working up, they just put him in the corner.
He shows up on Twitter and Facebook all the time.
Christoph is basically saying, look, it's time for me to start speaking out too. And I don't blame him because he's another one. regardless of regime, it's like, are y'all ever gonna write anything for Deal With Us anymore? You know, and Kristoff is, you know, look, he eating his Wheaties, he working out, you know, he, you know, let the man have a love story. He don't get to have no screen time with no woman in Genoa City but Kay Chancellor, and that's ungodly.
Mel, do you have an honorable or dishonorable?
Just to follow up on what Jillian says, actors, think before you tweet, and that's all I'ma say.
No, y'all. What y'all trying to do? Y'all trying to put us out of business? No, y'all don't. Just get off the Twitter and be mad at your boss and call her a fucking whore. Right on the
and
Twitter.
Spill a bunch of tea.
It's so much fun to watch that and see that, but you have to think about the fact that these are grown ass people and they turn into 4 year olds.
See,
I love it. Views and look stuff. I love it because that means because I know. Look, I know Jillian is already on it, and somebody that already told her. I'm like, ooh, we don't even have to dig for that scoop. Hurry up, screen cap that.
I mean, I don't, you know, I don't mind it because of the pay, you know, the hits, but when you have fans just flooding your inbox with these campaigns, save so-and-so, this one and that one, I'm like, what you mean save so-and-so, they dying? That's annoying. Like,
you're right, on a serious tip, the actors who abuse, it's nothing wrong with the actor using their fans to, you know, especially if they've been off for a while and it is egregious, you know, like text, for instance, like how with Melody Thomas Scott, when you have someone like when Sony is not valuing her and the fans step up and are like, you're going to bring Nicki Newman back. To me, that is a fan campaign gone good. But when these actors just use their fans all the time, and we know the ones who do this, they sneak little, you know, or they say little vague stuff. Well, I don't know when I'm going to be on again. Yeah, why don't you tell them how you refuse to do a story with XYZ and this one and that one so that when they tweet these writers and producers and they're like, why aren't you writing a story for so-and-so? Why don't you let them know, yeah, I turned down 3 story ideas that the writer pitched me. Well, boo-boo, if you on the back burner after you don't refuse to do a love scene with somebody, that's your bad. So maybe you sit on the back burner for a minute.
That's my problem, you know, when they act all, you know, Kristoff, we use Kristoff as an example because Kristoff gets no love. But when you see X, Y, and Z.
To speak out, yeah.
Right.
Ones, you know, they doing sneaky stuff on the set and then they get on there and be like, I don't know why.
See,
I'm not you.
I haven't worked in 2 weeks.
It just makes me sick when you have these stupid fan people, why won't you write for this person, that one? Why won't you save this person, Jillian? I'm like, maybe so-and-so don't need to be saved because so-and-so showing their ass off on that set and they need to cool it. You, like a 2-year-old, you need to have a timeout. Like, sit it down and shut it up. Like, ugh. I don't, you know, when people like, when Doug Davidson don't get no airplay and fans are like, we want to see more Doug Davidson. I don't mind that. But when you talk about this one and that one who been boss hogging the airtime, it's like, no, sit it down. Obviously, there's a reason why you in timeout, boo. So that's my problem. That's my thing right there.
My dishonorable mention is 6 words. Jill Farren Phelps fires Marcy Ryland. And
Good one!
On that note, we would encourage you to comment on this episode at daytimeconfidential.com. Tell us what you're thankful for this season, as well as what you may
and
not be so thankful for.
Pick a last name, Jill. No, I'm just kidding.
Huh?
I said pick a last name.
Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/DCConfidential, and add us as a friend on Facebook. Until next time, so long.
I don't know why I got fired. I was writing characters.